This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, I'm Sharad Kutin. With me at Tan Chung Han and Joyce Goh. It's the 10th of July, and we're taking you up to the 10th hour of the day. That's 10 a.m. With a range of interviews, news and analysis. It is the birthday of Tun Dr. Mahathir, the Prime Minister. He's 93 today. He was born in 1925.
I can't even imagine what life was like back in 1925, much less, you know, and well, I guess I don't have to imagine a 93-year-old leading Malaysia, but, you know, there he is, you know, still kicking, still going strong.
Yeah, and, well, he's definitely seen a lot more than what we have combined together.
No, I don't think so, because I'm already 52, combined... yeah, we get a way over a century.
Way to ruin the math there, Sharad.
Yeah, and I think it's important to get the math right.
Now, let's get Melissa in here.
There are many people who are trying to figure out what the secret of Tun Mahathir's success is in terms of at least his health, because we know that in the past he's had some health problems related to his heart. He's had a bypass operation, was that in IGN more than a couple of decades ago. But he remains an extraordinarily robust and energetic individual. And, you know, and the question is, how does he achieve that? Is that genetics? I mean, does he just come from a family with longevity and good health?
Well, I guess I don't know, and that is entirely up in the air, you know, speculation. But he seems to be doing much better than the one who is supposed to be taking over from him, you know, because we understand that Dato Sri Anwar is actually in Turkey right now undergoing surgery, right?
That's right, yeah. For his it's spinal surgery, I believe. It's got to do with, I believe he's suffered from spondylitis all these years. So, but I am no medical expert.
Well, I think Tun Mahathir did say that one of the secrets to him living a long life is to not overeat. That's one, I think, exercise, and to read a lot. Yeah.
Okay, Han, so many things on your checklist. Don't overeat.
I was looking at you as well.
Whatever. Were you? I was looking right back at you.
We failed on the first count right there.
Speaking of eating, a Malaysian from Seremban, no less, has won several awards this year, and has also broken into the mainstream supermarket franchise with her products.
Yeah, I think some of her products was what, lime leaf sambal, that's one, and another one is a pandan kaya.
And her name is Aurea Abraham, I think it's how you pronounce her name, A-U-R-I-A, Aurea Abraham from Seremban, and she markets her products under the brand Aurea's Malaysian Kitchen. I thought it's also very interesting. She went to the U.S. in the 1990s. So after a couple of decades, she's had tremendous success.
Yeah, you know, and way to fly the Malaysian flag out there. Look, Malaysian cuisine is, I guess, the best ambassador for Malaysia, at least, you know, right now. And, you know, there are moves for, you know, say, the Malaysian language to be another gateway, you know, to propel Malaysia's status on the world stage. Well, that might be a little bit further down the road, but at least, you know, for now, hey, it looks like Malaysian food is taking us to places where no other Malaysian has gone.
Yeah, the question is whether we can beat the Thais, because Thais have an amazing brand globally with their food. Speaking of Thailand, 8 boys have been brought out of those flooded caves there. This is in 2 days. So the rescue mission is ongoing. There are still 5 individuals left, 4 more boys, part of that team called the Wild Boars, and their coach. And, you know, what they've kept the world, you know, at the edge of their seats.
Right, and the stories that have come out from the rescue operations, and also the ordeal that all 13 of them had suffered while in the cave. There was that story about how the coach had apparently been giving up some of his food, and he's malnourished. You know, he was doing that so that the boys could, you know, live on longer. So, yeah, plenty of heroic acts coming out of that cave in Thailand.
Okay, we come back with a look at smartphones and what they're doing to us. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, Fairport Convention with who knows where the time goes. And of course, when it comes to children, that can't be more true. One day they're, you know, pooping in their nappies, and then the next day they're off to university. Some of them having given up that habit. So I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Tan Chung Han and Joyce Kuan. Of course, Joyce is the only person here with the experience of nappy changing.
Oh, I
really?
Thought
you don't need to be a parent to have experience in nappy changing. You're welcome to come over and try it out.
I can tell you horror stories about nappies and the stuff the kids deposit.
Well, thank you so much for the mental image.
Yeah. Moving right along, there's something to be said about the complexities of bringing up a child in this age. One of them has to do with devices, often used by parents to distract kids, but also they distract parents. Where do we go with this phone, smartphone dilemma when it comes to rearing child? Raising children. Rearing children. I sound like they were cattle.
Well, there's a new study out, and it shows that, you know, the behavior damages the parent-child relationship and leads to behavioral problems in children. This behavior is, of course, parents playing with their smartphones instead of watching their children, you know, making pies or pizza or,
making
you know,
pies.
Where they're swinging.
We're going back to that.
Can we please?
Well, so it shows that, you know, this new study shows that children tend to throw tantrums just to get the attention of their parents who spend too much time on their phones. Mm. And I don't think it's just for parents, you know. It's a new reality today. Even with, I mean, anybody. How much time do you guys spend on the phone? Do you realize?
How much
do you take, do you take account as to how much do you spend your time on technology? Just, you know, scrolling on your phone or on your laptop. And in this study, it shows that spend at least, 9 hours a day watching TV or on their computers or on smartphones?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't really calculate down to the minute how much time I spend staring at a screen, but yeah, I certainly am not surprised by that 9 hour figure there. And here's the thing, I don't even watch TV shows or movies on my laptop. I'm just constantly scrolling through social media feeds and whatnot.
Yeah, scrolling is very interesting because apparently as a mental phenomena, or as a trigger for mental phenomena, this scrolling innovation is actually is a fundamental source of the addictive quality of smartphones, right? This seamless scrolling. The expression I've heard used is like cocaine on the brain. Mm. Basically, it has that kind of quality.
Yeah, and I recall a very startling revelation. I was with my friends and they had a little young'un right there playing. And this little toddler had a magazine in front of her, right? And she kept trying to swipe the page, the physical pages, like trying to tap on the pictures.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I was just sitting there watching. I was like, well, this is kind of weird. And this is troubling, you know, in terms of the future prospects of this, well, not just the nation, but the world, right?
Well, at least for magazines and print media. Right. I do think, though, going back to an earlier time before we had these distractions where television, remember that box in your living room was seen as a major social evil and something that could ruin the lives of families and children and so on and so forth. There is a structure in which I think there's always this panic around technology and what's going to do to us. But I think there was a time, that this has always been true. Children are always eager to get the attention of their parents and parents are often distracted by other things. And it could be hunting that dinosaur. I don't know, they didn't exist in, you know, primitive man didn't actually exist with dinosaurs. Oh. But you know what I mean. So, you know, this is a perennial problem.
It's a reality. I mean, parents do. In this article, it says, you know, parents are accustomed to turning to their electronic devices for a break. It happens. I admit, I do go online, check on social media. I do
bad mom.
Hashtag bad mommy. Yeah, I do check on my phone for even because for work. You know, now with technology, you're you're on your phone for work or not non work stuff as well. So it's just because of the realities today. It happens. It's just that, you know, whether or not we are aware of it and when do we draw the line?
Well, I mean, going back to Shiraz's point there, you know, while it may be a perennial problem, but if you talk about, say, like the scarcity or the limits to mankind's attention span, you know, etc., like surely we must be pushing the boundary there to God knows what kind of territory.
Okay, tell us what you think when it comes to smartphones and bringing up children. You can tweet us at BFM Radio, or you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. We'll be back. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9 Arcade Fire with Wake Up. I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Tan Chung Han and Joyce Goh. And of course, we've all woken up to a new morning. And this is, you know, Tuesday, the 10th of July. But it's also a new Malaysia, as the popular phrase is going around, Malaysia Baru, or Baharu, to be more precise. And there are a lot of expectations on the current government, the new government, the newly minted government. And expressions like Malaysia Baru have been bandied about to explain and justify, or actually more often to criticize the current government. But you remember that older phrase, Malaysia Boleh, that was also popularized during a time. And that, and expressions like that, and the thinking behind that, can also lead to problems. So say this commentator, Nurul Azwar Ares. Now, he's written an article suggesting that the expression, or the thinking behind the expression, Malaysia Boleh, can lead the young astray.
Yeah, so this article goes on to say that, you know, there are statistics that show that between 2013 and May this year, a total of over 2,000 over youth or young adults had been convicted of corruption. That's about 55.2% of corruption convictions.
Right. So I guess the relation to, well, between those stats and the Malaysia Boleh concept, well, it employs a bastardized interpretation of the Malaysia Boleh. Because on one hand, Malaysia Boleh was seen to be a rallying cry, right? So that Malaysians will rise up and fulfill our true potential in a positive sense. But then, you know, it's also used as a, you know, way of saying, okay, anything goes in Malaysia, like Malaysia Boleh, right?
Well, okay, so that's the other side to it. But I think even within the terms that to achieve your potential, is that what was the measure of success? Mm. And haven't we been in the grips of this idea that your wealth and displays of wealth are in fact sufficient to make you think, oh, this is a successful individual? We've not celebrated as much cultural achievements as we have celebrated financial and economic and business achievements. Mm. That's been the temper of the country for the last couple of decades.
Yeah, you know, the whole cash is king thing, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. Cash is king. And you look at, you know, this ostentatious displays of wealth that have become de rigueur for the political elite. They constantly flaunt their wealth, and for them, it's not embarrassment. In fact, because the response to that is often awe.
Yeah, and look, trying to disrupt that mindset is going to be tremendously tough, right? Because we have been socialized to judge a person's worth based on, you know, the displays of material wealth. You know, whether you like it or not, there seems to be, you know, a significant amount of society, or just life in society, that very much focuses on that. I'll give you an example. I'm going to be quite vulnerable here, but, you know, why not? It's 6:24 in the morning. Hopefully no one will judge me for this. So I'm on Tinder, right? I'm on some of these dating apps and whatnot. Some of them explicitly will demand that whoever is swiping right on you, or potentially, has to be financially secure, needs to have a house. Why? Because I need to respect you. So they actually explicitly, they being some of these women on Tinder
that you are attracted to,
maybe, or who just
when
shows up on the app.
Swipe right means you like the person.
Yeah, you know. So in their bio, they actually make these demands. So, you know,
and because we have all kinds of phenomena, including something like the candy daddy or the sugar daddy.
Yeah, I am not on that
sugar
app.
Book.
Yeah,
sugar
so
book.
Sugar book.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay, but okay. So coming back to Malaysia Boleh, mm-hmm. Malaysia Boleh, the problem.
Well, according to P. Sundramuti of University Science Malaysia, and he said that the Malaysia Boleh concept had negative qualities because it would make it totally unacceptable, because say, most people interpret that slogan as a way to informally settle serious matters by compromising on ethical issues.
Right. So, once again, I think it's a, you know, bastardized interpretation of the Malaysia Boleh spirit, right? But where, from what I gather, he hints at this top-down approach thing, whereby, oh, it's because the leaders of the day, you know, have set the tone with this leadership that's seen to be morally void. You know, there's corruption that's rampant at the highest levels, and so that trickles down to the youth. I mean, that's what he's asserting, right? I think that net has to be cast a lot wider. You know, it's not just, say, leadership per se, but I think you can see that across many facets of society here in Malaysia. Now, because you have that feudal mindset, you know, there's that very hierarchical thought process as well, etc.
Well, he also says, he also puts the blame on Malaysia's education system. He says that has failed to educate the young on the clear difference between right and wrong, the good and bad.
Yeah, we're always blaming someone else. That's what I say. Okay, Sugar Ray with Every Morning, taking us up to the first bulletin this morning. And stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, John Mayer with A New Light. I'm Sharad Kutin with me, Tan Chung Han and Joyce Goh. And the morning run continues. It's the 10th of July. We're taking it all the way up to 10 o'clock this morning with a range of interviews, news and analysis.
Look, that song I think is the jam of the moment for at least 66% of those of us here in the
jam,
studio
like
right
Marmalade
now.
Marmalade jam. Okay.
Oh my gosh. What a dad joke. That's so bad.
That's so bad. Yeah, because, you know, I come from a different time. Mm. Well, next week, there'll be a bit of a jam because there's going to be a boxing match. And it's going to be between a Filipino politician. You know, Manny Pacquiao is now a senator. He's a senator. He's still fighting. And he's set to fight Argentinian boxer Lucas Matthys. I think that's how you pronounce his name. And at any rate, we're going to have an unofficial visit from the president of the Republic of Philippines, Rodrigo Duterte. It's an unofficial visit, but he is going to apparently meet with Dr. Marthe on the side. So we look forward to that.
Yeah, you know, and this will be the latest, again, if it materializes, this will be the latest in a string of visits by the head of states for surrounding our neighbors, you know, coming and saying hi to our current prime minister.
Yeah,
right?
Also, and what's interesting about Duterte was in the news recently saying that he will willingly step down from the office of president if somebody can prove to him that God exists. Mm. And this is part of his ongoing spat with the Catholic Church and I think the Christian clergy out in the Philippines. So I'm looking forward to somebody, you know, giving definitive proof of the existence of God that leads to the resignation of a sitting president.
Well, I think, yeah, well, I don't know if that will feature highly on the agenda between that unofficial meeting, but sure, one can hope.
Yeah, because, you know, think about it, right? All these people scrambling to prove the existence of God in the face of a very interesting material consequence, which is the man's going to step down from office. Anyway, okay, moving on to something a little more mundane, which is trash. And
well, that's a segue right there.
Yeah, picking up trash after you've done with having a bit of fun. And we know, of course, English football fans are notorious for celebrating by trashing everything.
Whoa. Yeah, hold on.
They did.
Sports fans.
Not
you know,
all, like, though.
Yeah, you see that with hockey. You see the NHL and the NFL. You know,
no, yeah. I don't think it's there's something about football hooliganism, I think, raised the phenomenon to a kind of higher degree. Now, in that very famous viral image of the current Minister of Youth and Sport picking up trash after a game, there's been a lot of talk about why he did it and what value is it to anybody. So we spoke to Wee Kin Fai. He is the deputy director of Goal.com. That's an International Association football news website, apparently. We asked Kin Fai if he thinks the site static's actions will have a knock-on effect on the behavior of our football fans.
Yes, I think it should have a knock-on effect. Generally, Malaysians' attitude tend to follow things when they see their leaders or those people in high positions do things like this. But what I hope is that it's genuine attempt from Said Sadiq to do that, and it's not just a political move or something that is being done because there's cameras or videos around. Plus, there's also a growing move from what we've seen on social media when doing this World Cup, that what Japan did, and it's another thing that gone viral.
That was Wee Kin Fai. He's the deputy editor of Goal.com. He clearly was standing next to Darth Vader when he gave that interview. Now, okay, so do you agree? Do people follow what politicians do? Are they role models for many?
Yeah, look, I mean, I'm quite skeptical about that notion, right? Because if that's all it takes, then you would see this conformity in terms of how we behave, right? Again, if you subscribe to this notion that we all follow what our leaders do, we just copy them, we just mirror them, right? I'm a proponent of a bottom-up approach, you know, whereby, you know, look, they can go ahead, they being these politicians, I mean, they can go ahead with this signaling, which is very much welcome. I'm not going to bash Syed Saddiq for it. In fact, I welcome that. You know, it's necessary for optics at least. Whether he's genuine in it, that's up for debate. But I don't know if that will necessarily trickle down to, you know, people actually, oh, just because Sadiq did it, I will do it.
Well, there's this whole lead by example, walking the talk, tone from the top. I think that's good. Optics aside, I mean, hopefully, I hope he's doing this genuinely. It's not for a whole, I mean, it's not a PR exercise. I'm not sure. I mean, he's gotten mixed feedback from this whole viral video. Some people are saying this is great to see Sadiq pick up trash. Some people are saying, you know, is this a PR exercise? But yeah, I think it's good though to see people actually picking up rubbish after a game, which was set by the whole Japanese team, right? Japanese fans.
Well, you know, this is the thing. I think that parents probably are more important role models when it comes to the behavior of younger people. Mm-hmm. So I think... And I think we're looking often at young people whose behavior could be, you know, reset or shaped by, you know, role models. Older people like Han, I mean, you know, you can't teach them new tricks. You just can't.
But,
woof.
But sometimes, woof. You know, we're learning every day.
Yeah.
You know?
Look, Sharad, you study sociology, right? And so, you know, in sociology, there there's a thing called primary socialization and secondary socialization. Primary socialization is where, you know, a child learns within the family context what are the accepted norms and values, right? So that has a much, much greater impact on the individual's behaviors than, say, a minister who's, you know, way more distant compared to the parents at home, and then eventually later in life, peers, you know, teachers, etc.
Okay, tell us what you think. Tweet us at BFM Radio or WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. We'll be back with a look at a Twitter poll we put out regarding Najib Razak's corruption trial. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. That was Smokey Robinson with The Miracles and The Tracks of My Tears. I'm sure I could in with me, Joyce Goh and Tan Chung Han. And remember, you can always join us in this conversation by tweeting us at BFM Radio, WhatsApping us. And in fact, we did get a WhatsApp from Anwar Anis, who said, speaking about the minister, Syed Sadiq, he says, not a Syed Sadiq fan, but even if it was a PR exercise, at least it's the right one.
Yeah.
So says Anis. And okay. Also, KK has jumped in with a comment as well. It says, clearing trash. Get Malaysians to start clearing their own trays at McDonald's and KFCs first. That's what the customers do in first world countries.
Bottom up.
That's a good point.
Okay, so while Han is fixated on his button, let's move on.
Whoa.
Well, hold on. Just to remind you that in about half an hour, we're going to be speaking to the former press officer of Syed Sadiq, Numan Afifi, about the controversy that has engulfed him. He, of course, you know, has recently stepped down as the interim interim press officer for Syed Sadiq. So, okay, we're going to be following up on that controversy.
And if you haven't followed the story, essentially that controversy stems from accusations that Numan Afifi was furthering the LGBT agenda, you know, given his position over there in the Youth and Sports Ministry.
It'll be interesting to hear his reasons why he did what he did.
Why he stepped down. Okay.
Yeah.
So let's look at a Twitter poll we put out last night. It's ended when we asked whether you think Najib Razak's corruption trial should be broadcast live. And this was the consequence, a result of a push by some individuals to have the proceedings live. And we asked, we gave you three options, yes, no, and it does not matter to me. 78% said they would like it to be aired publicly. 10% said no, they don't think it's fair to him. And 12% say they're indifferent. So we had over 1,000 votes in this poll.
Yeah. I would quantify that yes, air it publicly by adding a fourth option. Yes, air it publicly, but can somebody just edit down the juicy parts and then put it into like 30-second rap for me? Because I don't have time to like sit there for hours. I mean, some of these trials are just long, drawn-out processes.
Yeah.
And it can get really, really dry with the legalese and whatnot.
The language that you use in courts.
I'm not going to just sit there, you know, for the whole day and just watch every single
development. Maybe you won't, but others might. And especially when it comes to some high points. And the question is, because when is that going to happen? And you're absolutely right. I've sat in court because of a suit that I was part of against the... the Royal Police for illegal arrest and detention. And I must say, my brain froze over many parts. And I was actually one of the stakeholders. Yeah. I mean, I had something to gain from winning this case.
Well, I remember covering a court session for my job earlier at The Edge. And this was a Hong Leong Eon Cap case. And some parts were juicy, but because we had to listen to everything, because if you missed out anything, you get in trouble with the boss. Right. But it was, sometimes you just have to force yourself to listen to it. Because it can get really dry.
Okay, tell us what you think. Well, with the polls have closed, you can still tell us what you think by tweeting us or WhatsApping us. Remember, the number for WhatsApp is 018-789-8899. Leave your name so we can do a little shout out to you. It is Malaysia Baru. No need to hide behind anonymity. You know, you can put yourself out there. I think I wonder though if there's something to be said for those 10%. Who say it's not fair to him. He's already complained, that is, Najib Razak, that is, that he's being tried in the court of public opinion. This is going to raise that to an even higher level. It's going to become a spectacle. Some people think it will turn into a circus. Do we want the court to be subject to that?
Yeah, I mean, because earlier this morning we were trying to figure out if there was a precedent to, you know, such a case, well, certainly such a high-profile case being aired, you know, via, I guess, you know, TV or radio.
In fact, any case.
Right, yeah, I mean, because the closest we could think of was perhaps O.J. Simpson, or you
recall
those...
Well, that was in the U.S.,
right? Yeah, you know, very iconic pictures of images of him holding his hands up with those really tight gloves, you know, so... You know, yeah, could this be the precedent for Malaysian legal history?
Put yourself in his shoes. Would you want your trial to be aired publicly?
Okay, just don't steal state money. then you won't be in his shoes, well, allegedly. Okay, now taking us to the next bulletin of the morning. Phaser Days with A Little Uneasy. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.